call this Minnesota Senate Committee on, some committee on gaming under the State and Local Government Committee to order. This is, I've been to a lot of hearings over the interim, and I must say this is one of the best attended ones I've been to yet. I'm very happy that everyone could make it here today, that we're here to get an update on Minnesota State Lottery. So glad to be here. Clint Harris will take over from here.
Good morning, Chairman Laurie, members of the committee, guests. We're really pleased that you are coming to our humble abode, and we'll look forward to giving you some information. And when we're done, if you're able to, we'd love to give you a tour of the facility so you can see what it is we do exactly. I'd like to introduce my senior staff, kind of in a senior row here a little bit. Let's see.
You're out of order. Huh?
Roger's sitting over there. He's with the North Star Gaming Alliance, and he's going to be all befuddled. He's here visiting. We lend an office to him so he has a place to work. Doug Wills is our security director. John Maline is our marketing director. Dale McDonald, my attorney. Jenny Canfield is the director of operations. And we have two folks from Cole McBoy, Riff Yeager, who's in the area of PR or public relations, and Jennifer Gold, who's our main person. When we have problems, we go to her. So, with that, I'm sorry, Joe. Oh, I forget Joe, our CFO, Joe Paul. Danny Smith is the local head of our vendor, GTEC. He leases some space in this building, which you'll see today. Charlie Miles works for Doug. He's our security in case there's any rattle rousers here today. And we have Todd Mackey and Karen Singer, who are support staff. Okay. And more people at the Debbie Hoffman is our public relations manager here as well. All right. Thank you. Get out of the way of the screen. We're going to be providing you sort of a look at how fiscal year 7 performed. We're going to be providing you some information, general information about gambling in Minnesota that was taken from surveys done by St. Cloud University. We're going to be showing you some initiatives we are undertaking to maintain and improve sales and operations, and some longer-term issues that don't require immediate action. All right. Before we get going, I want to just remind you our mission statement. The lottery offers fun, innovative, and secure games that create excitement and reflect Minnesota values and maximize contributions to the state. So with that, let's move on. Here's a look to comparing the last 4 years to the current, the most recent four. I'm sorry. Here's a comparison of the last 4 years to the four prior years. You can see sales are up 12%, operating expenses are down 28%, and most importantly, revenue to the state is up 34%, which we're very proud of. Fiscal year 07 was our second best year ever, only beat by fiscal year 06. Fiscal year 06 sales resulted from abnormally high Powerball jackpots, which we didn't expect to repeat. Fiscal year 07 sales and proceeds were, however, even though our sales were down, fiscal year 07 sales and proceeds were slightly over budget. The slight sales decline that you was due largely to the $26 million decline in Powerball sales because of jackpots. As you can see, we went from 9 drawings in 2006 with jackpots over $200 million to 4 jackpots over $200 million in fiscal year 07. And as you can see, for the difference between 06 and 07 and 07 is $27 million, exactly how much lower we were than the year before. Now I'd like to compare fiscal year 07 to 10 years ago. Over the last 10 years, online games have become, as you can see, have become a more important part of our product mix. That is important because that is a good thing because Online games are more profitable than scratch games, even though scratch games are our most popular game. Here's a look at the evolution of the price points in our scratch games. The $1 game has become less important. We now offer 2, 3, 5, and 10 on a regular basis. But we have found that customers like that variety. As you can see, last year we introduced the most number of scratch games ever. This is because customers demand variety. They like different themes, different play styles, and different price structures. Of course, that means much more work.
Right?
A question, Mr. Chair.
Yes. I should have mentioned earlier. Feel free to break in at any time.
Can I just get?
Yes.
I'm trying to remember exactly, but I think in the gambling bill that we did this year, they made some changes in the Walt family, charitable gambling,
mm-hmm.
that we allow some of their games of chance, and I don't remember exactly which ones they were, to match the level at which not $15 ones, but I think $3 and $5 ones or $7 ones in their offerings. And I'm sorry to be so vague, but I can't recall exactly. But have you noticed, because of allowing them to compete at the same level as the lottery games, has there been any impact consumer choice, or whether they would go with a lottery game as opposed to finding the games in the
bars.
Charitable gambling or full tabs. I don't even know if it's full tabs or whatever has that had any impact, or is it too early to tell? I think that just went into effect.
Well, full tabs obviously is the most dominant, represents, John probably can tell me exactly. It's 80% payout, and we don't have an 80% payout game here, and that's one of the drivers that makes games attractive to players, is more prize money. Pull Taps is somewhere in the $1.2 billion range, and I know they have some other games like Paddle Wheels and others, I'm not sure. From our perspective, we believe that Pull Tabs is one of our largest competitors. They are. I think we could probably do a lot better in scratch games if it weren't for the pull tab business. So there is a bit of competition there, but that's been all along.
So
I don't think there's anything new that
it hasn't. Even though your dollar ones have now are not as popular, and it's like the $15 ones. Maybe we could go back to that other slide.
Yeah.
One right before that. Yeah, but that one.
Right. Right.
In 1991, it was the only product we had was the $1 game, and so.
Just let's see. So it looks like what is the most popular one?
The $5.
And I think that's what we. Mr. Gallen, do you remember?
Was it the $3 and $5 pull tabs? Was my.
Is that what you recall?
Recollection.
So it'd be interesting, at least.
But I would
to see whether if it has any impact or if it's just a wrong one.
My son won $250 on a $5 pull tab, so no. a week ago, but they're not. They're. So I know the $5 category exists in the full-time business. As far as, I don't know, Don, if there's anything you can add. We just know that we have this culture in Minnesota of playing pull tabs in bars and taverns, you know, for, 20, 30, 40 years. And so that's hard to change. We've tried to get into some of the bars and taverns with limited success. So if you look at Wisconsin, their scratch sales are probably 30, 40, 50% higher than ours.
Mr. Chairman, that's not because of law forbids you to do that, is it? Or
Right, correct.
Law does forbid you
yeah.
to go
and when we get to the end, we talked about future things. We're going to be talking a little bit about that, this subject, about things that we, if the legislature is interested, things that we could do to raise a lot more revenue. So
one thing I would take note of, it looks like certainly as far as money goes in 07, the $1 aren't the dominating, but they would be more popular, it looks like more sold than $5, and then you'd have to multiply that $1.
Now, the retailers like to
only five times.
Right.
The
$1 is not irrelevant, though, because the $1 is the price point where our prize is a little lower. Obviously, the $1 are more profitable. And so we are always going to keep $1 games on there.
But I'm just trying to figure out, it looks like the $1 is the highest volume sold.
Right, in that sense, yes.
There are more $1 tickets sold than $5 tickets.
Right,
even though
right.
Expensive.
You have to sell five $1 just to set before you match up with the $5 tickets. Our sales goes, yes. This is quantity-wise, it is still a good number. All right. We were on this slide. As you can see, because we have smaller runs of games, we have to offer more games because our players seem to like variety. Of course, all that means much more work in the game design and the marketing efforts associated with it. In fact, on average today, retailers have about 20 games on sale at any one time in their stores. And, of course, as you can see from this slide, there's one sector of our retailer base that we really, really, that is very important to us. They represent 80% of the sales. That's the convenience store industry. You can see that restaurants and bars are only 1% of sales. And because of that, it's such a small number, we feel the smoking ban will have very little impact on our sales as compared to pull tabs.
That's okay.
Senator Roebling?
Yes.
I used to go to convenience stores all the time to pay for my gas, mm-hmm. and now I swipe my card, and so I don't go in as often. Do you think, is that going to have much effect on sales?
We'll be talking about that, about credit cards, debit cards, because that's become an issue. A lot. Everybody's going cashless, checkless. They're going with debits and credit cards, and that has...
I think the issue is pay at the pump.
I know. Pay the pump is part of it, and I guess I'll go off my list here. One of the things that we've done to help convenience stores and help ourselves is we put jackpot signs, electronic jackpot signs. We're almost completed putting jackpot signs in about 2,500 of our 3,100 retailers, and of course 80% of them are C stores. And so we hang a jackpot sign that has the Powerball jackpot for the day. Our Hot Lotto, we have four games on there that are lotto games. And we've sold those to retailers as a tool to, you know, have a guy who's or somebody who's paying at the pump realize, oh, I should go get a Powerball. I'll go in. And they may buy a pop, a can of pop, too.
Senator Ross?
What's to keep you? And I'm not saying I support this.
Yes.
But at some, you know, super gas stores now, there's a you get a TV show.
Yes, and
gas.
We are.
And what's to keep you from getting on that? And also, what's to keep you from just like when you swipe your card for gas, you can also say you want a car wash, and it's charged on there. What's to keep you, and I'm not saying the law will direct you to do it.
Right.
But why aren't there more choices? Because obviously there could have, seems to me, the technology would be there to print out on the receipt a Powerball number, just like there's a code for getting into the car wash.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm sure that you could have the security that it would,
yes,
you know, take care of that. It's a matter of that. for right now, why don't you do that? Well, and also have a little shot on the, now I'm not saying I recommend it at all.
I understand.
But, just from a business decision. Why not be on there with Fox News while I'm pumping my gas?
We are right now. We've got a pilot test that we're doing with, is it Holiday?
50 Holiday.
Pardon me?
50
Holiday stores. We have a part of that where an ad comes up about lottery. And I don't know, John, is it different or is it the same thing in all of them? What's the message? Scratch games?
Start with raffle.
Okay. Yeah. So we're doing that right now with Holiday.
So I can buy a raffle ticket?
No, not buy it, but advertise it. Get the person who's pumping their gas, his attention,
no.
while watching Fox News, and they'll slip in a lottery ad.
Mr. Chairman, one of the other things you're doing that is drawing people like myself into the gas, the Holiday thing, after I've watched Fox News. That's not true. I'm coming my gas. The Holiday section, the stations that are right across from Cup, and I go in there with my 11 cents off per gallon.
Yes.
Ticket, and of course I can only pay if I go in. And since it only takes me 30 seconds to walk my car to go in, I use those coupons and get my $1.50 off my gas.
Yeah, that's important.
But I do it. And it would seem to me that even though that's not a direct thing, that just from a business point of view, that relationship between the Cubs and the Holidays is, and of course the Holiday stations are right across the street from the Cubs, so it's extremely convenient to do that. Would be a really good marketing thing. And do you have the technology to issue a powerball right there?
We don't now, but there is, in fact, at the our national conference in Louisville in October, early October, a gentleman presented to the full board of directors for both all of North America about a notion that he has an idea that will allow him to sell Powerball tickets through ATMs and gas pumps. There's a federal law that, as far as ATMs is concerned, that has to get over, but he believes that that'll happen. And so the technology is just about there. He says he's got the technology developed. You've got to have, a way to swipe a driver's license to make sure you're the right age before you buy it. And, of course, that may require debit or credit cards to pay for it as well, which is, again, an issue, the topic we'll be talking about. So the technology is there. Okay. What slide are we?
Mr. Harris, one of the things that I would be concerned about, that even though it's a good marketing decision that I'm interested in it but not sure I would support it, is whether, and I don't know whether the studies show this or not, but the degree to which it can be automatic and convenient, that we have more people who become more prone to problem gambling, which would be also the issue that I would have a problem with in having lottery tickets in the restaurants and bars where people go and they sit and they do hold dance. And they would go and sit for an hour and do lottery tickets for on Friday afternoon after they got their paycheck. I would begin to get more concerned about whether the lottery, which currently does not contribute except minuscule to problem gambling, would become more of a source of problem gambling. And I want to be very, very careful about the ways in which we encouraged additional
All right. A little bit about our the FY7 revenue distribution. The distribution of revenue has changed very little in recent years. Prizes, as you can see, remain the biggest expense. Last year, 26.5 cents of every dollar went to state beneficiaries. We continue to keep, as you can see, we continue to keep operating expenses under control. In fact, over the last 4 years, it's averaged less than 1% increases. Expenses, of course, as percent will decline as sales grow due to the economies of scale. Point that out. Most importantly, FY07 was the second best year ever for returns to the state, $112 million. It is the fourth straight year we've exceeded $100 million in revenues. Of course, the distribution is determined by law. The legislature can change everything but the Environmental Trust Fund, which is in the Constitution. As you can see, the General Fund is the biggest beneficiary at 54%. But when you add up the categories of environmental projects and programs, the environment is the second biggest at 44%. So, if there's no questions about the distribution of revenue, the 44% represents the total proceeds to the environment represents $49.5 million.
Maybe you know this, but maybe one of our other members knows this. Does that money that goes to natural resources, game and fish, and the Environmental Trust Fund all get appropriated by the LCCM?
No, just the Environmental Trust Fund money, right.
Okay.
Just the trust fund.
So the other ones then go directly to the DNR and for specific purposes?
I think that's money coming out of the general fund, which is appropriated, I'm assuming.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Roebling, Don Feeney, Research and Planning Director. The legislature has approached that a couple of different ways. Some years they have just put the Game and Fish Fund money commingled with all the money that comes in from hunting licenses or whatever, and it's at the DNR's discretion how to spend that. In other years, the legislature has earmarked some of that money. The Natural Resources Fund has a formula distribution that was set in law a number of years ago. The legislature could, of course, change that. But the money is divided, and I don't remember the percentages, but between state parks and trails, metro area parks and trails, a smaller percentage for Greater Minnesota City and County parks and trails, and then about maybe 3% total going to the Duluth, Apple Valley, and Como Zoos.
Okay, I'm going to take a break for a moment and let Don talk about general information about gambling in Minnesota.
Okay. Mr. Chairman, members, what I want to discuss today is some information that we have learned from a survey that we cooperate with St. Cloud State University on every year. We've been doing this since 1993, where the survey has been asking a number of questions related to gambling, in particular what activities people do, and then some of their attitudes about gambling. And I'm bringing this up for a couple of reasons. One, to talk to you a little bit about specifically what we've learned from it, but also because this is a pretty good and pretty unique information resource. There is no data series like this going back now 14 years that exists anywhere else in the country, and it's something that if there are questions that come up about any particular form of gambling in terms of how popular it is, who is and who is doing it, we can pull the information out of this survey to answer those questions. It's a pretty extensive survey, 1,200 respondents, telephone survey, random digit dialing, all of that sort of good state-of-the-art stuff. If we look at what people said they were doing in the past year, you can see that last year we had about 3 out of every 4 Minnesotans say they have gambled on something in the past year. If we look at this lifetime, and I don't have the slide here, but that number goes up to 90%. 9 out of every 10 people has bet on something at some point in their life. So it's slightly, yes, less universal than paying taxes, but not a tremendous amount. Now, the activities that they do are all over the board. Minnesota Lottery is the most popular. About half of the people last year said they bought a lottery ticket. In previous years, that when we have high Powerball jackpots, the $300 million Powerball jackpots, that number jumps up to close to 60%. But it generally stays year after year in that sort of 50 to 60% range. Charitable raffles, 40%. A little less than a third went to a casino. We asked about specific activities. About a third, again, said they played a slot machine, less than a third. Pull tabs were about 1 in 4. 1 in 5 had played a card game for money, wherever, at the casino or at the card club or in their basement or wherever that happened to be. And then other forms of gambling are you can see, less popular. We compare this to see what's happened with these over the last 10 years, looking at these 3 years as sort of a snapshot. You can see that the 80% to 77%, that's within the range of error of the survey. I don't think it means a tremendous amount. Minnesota Lottery has grown a little bit again. I don't know that that's necessarily means anything. The casino one is what's really interesting. 29%, 42%, 30%. And that 42% was not a fluke if we look at the years before and after that. There was that sort of bell-shaped sort of curve on that. So for whatever reason, in the last 5 years, the number of people going to the tribal casinos has decreased by a significant amount. I have no idea if that is reflected in their revenues or not. I can speculate on why that is, but it is just speculation. I have absolutely no information to back my speculation up, so unless you really want to hear my speculation, I'll keep it quiet. Pull tabs, you can see, and this goes, but if we go back before 1997, you see the same trend. Pull tabs has been in a pretty steady decline in terms of the overall participation. That I know is reflected in their revenues, which did peak around 1997, if I remember, and it's been declining a little bit ever since. That, I believe, is because of pull tabs tend to appeal to an older audience and, to a lesser extent, a very young audience. I think what happens is the population is aging out of the years in which people go to bars. And so as a result, the people are not going to bars, therefore they are not buying pull tabs, and so we've seen this over a long time pattern of pull tab sales and participation declining. It's possible that once
Senator Rice.
I didn't mean to interrupt your sentence, but in the survey, and it's obviously you went there to get it. It's not really a survey; it's a poll. It's a scientific
correct
poll. Do you all ask how many people participate in more than one of those activities, or how many people gamble on everything?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Rest, we do ask. We ask each of these as individual questions. We ask, in the past year, did you buy a lottery ticket? In the past year, did you buy a pull tab? Etc. And the number of people who do everything is really, really small. In fact, there probably wasn't anyone in the survey who did everything. The average in the past year was somewhere between 2 and 3.
Mr. Chairman, Mr. Feeney, what were those? Was it the lottery and the casino, or the lottery and pull tabs, or those I'm assuming would be the most?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Rest, the single most popular one was lottery alone.
Yeah.
Now, when you get into the combinations, there's no one combination that stands out there. It's all over the place. We know that most people who bought a pull tab also bought a lottery ticket, or most people who went to a casino also bought a lottery ticket. It does not work the other way around.
Mr. Chairman, Mr. Feeney, I think the survey is done every year in February.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Rest, it's been February the last few years. Before that, it was April. We moved it for logistical reasons.
It would be very, very interesting, although it's not part of the smoking ban bill, as I recall, in terms of who's responsible for looking at economic impacts. I don't know exactly what that is. But to have a question about whether the degree to which you can smoke in a venue in which there is gambling going on affects your choice of what kind of gambling you do. And I think you could make the question a whole lot simpler than I just did. But it would be very interesting to me to know whether pull tabs, for example, take a nosedive, and the casino gambling goes back up because it's a tribal decision about whether to allow smoking in those venues. And there's some parts of casinos where they do it and some parts where they don't. And, of course, in some casinos there's no alcohol, but in some there is. But it would be interesting just to cross-tab on did that make a difference to you in the type of gambling you did, whether it was because you had you did it because of a destination decision as opposed to the type of gambling that was involved. I think that would be very interesting to those that are looking at economic impacts of smoking ban on the gambling industry.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Rest, yeah, we can certainly ask that, and I'll make a note that we do. I do have to caution that the chances of having that information in time for this year's legislative or next year's legislative session is probably slim. I also know that the Department of Revenue...
If you do it in February or March, at least for the 2009 session, there would be some pretty solid information about at least if it was done even a little bit later than February, you'd have maybe 7 or 8 months experience rather than October, November, December, January. I don't know how much of a conclusion you could reach about 5 months experience as opposed to delaying that survey or poll another couple of months and having 7 or 8 months experience to be able to report to the 2009 legislature. Just a suggestion.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Rest, unfortunately, I think we are pretty well locked into February because of St. Cloud's schedule. The Department of Revenue is doing a study currently on the revenue impact of the smoking ban, but how they're going to do that with like 2 months of information escapes me.
Not going to be very reliable.
No. Just a little bit about what we've learned from the survey about lottery, about who is playing the lottery. You can see that the number, other than very high Powerball jackpot years, has remained pretty much consistent in this 50-55% percent range. So it seems that our audience overall is really not changing very much, and we've seen the demographics have really not changed very much over the years as well. Education, the amount of education you have does not really make much of a difference as to whether or not you buy a lottery ticket. This number, which is less than people who didn't complete high school, is lower. That is largely because people in Minnesota who have not completed high school tend to be among the very elderly, who, as we'll see, play lottery less. So I think it has nothing to do with education. It has a lot more to do with age. Income, interestingly enough, lottery participation is highest among people with the highest incomes. 63% of people with incomes of $100,000 and over said that they bought a lottery ticket. Now, one thing I have not yet figured out a good way to ask on the survey yet is how much did you spend, which is obviously the big missing piece in there. And I'm struggling with a way to ask that question in such a way as you get reliable information. When you think about it, say, somebody calls you up on the phone and says, in the last year, how much money have you spent on coffee? You'd make a guess, and the guess wouldn't be very good. And the same thing holds true on gambling expenditures. There are some people working on ways to ask that question to get more reliable information, but I'm not yet convinced it can be done.
Mr. Feeney, could you explain, St. Cloud University implements this survey every year. You design the questions. Is that the State Lottery designs the questions? Is there participation from... I'd just like to know a little bit about...
Mr. Chairman, in general, that is true. We work with the survey directors at St. Cloud on the design of the questions. Largely, we dictate the content because we are paying for the survey. But you know, they have a lot of expertise in designing questions.
Yeah.
Now, over the past several years, really the survey content hasn't changed much. So, I think the most significant determination, and this all is true not only for lottery, but for virtually every other form of gambling, is how old you are. People over 75, for a variety of reasons, lack of mobility certainly being one of them, are much less likely to buy lottery tickets, but I think there's also a generational experience question there, too. These are the people who came of age as Luther Youngville was smashing the slot machines. And so their experience with gambling is just very, very different from people in their 40s or 50s, and certainly than people in the 18 to 24-year-old category. Now, this is the one, again, and also where this differs, because people in this age group, gamble quite a bit. They are not, however, buying lottery tickets, or not buying lottery tickets as much as the baby boomers are. And that is certainly an issue for us as far as future revenues go. It just doesn't seem to have the immediate response or action or technology or whatever it is. And so that's an issue that that we're going to have to confront. I mentioned that we ask attitudinal questions. This is one which I find just absolutely fascinating that we've been asking all along. Do you agree with this statement? I'm opposed to gambling for moral or religious reasons. And you see that the number has come down since we first asked that question in 1995. It picked up a little bit here, and this is the people who strongly agree with that statement. If you remember, this was the year that there were all the debates in the legislature over state-operated casinos and all kinds of other things, so that there were editorials, front-page news stories, or whatever, and I think that really had an effect on people's perception, at least enough. 4% in the strongly agree or 5% in the agree is not that big a jump, but as a reversal of trend, it was significant, and the numbers have hovered around that level. I should clarify, this is 14% strongly agreed, and then another 12% said they agreed somewhat, for a total of people who agreed to some degree of 26%. Now, this has a very significant component of a couple of things. One, we go back and we look at this and say, all right, you said you were morally opposed to gambling. Did you gamble? We go back and cross tab with the pull tabs or whatever. And look at this. 80% of the people who said they strongly agree that they are morally opposed to gambling have gambled at some point in their lives, and almost 3 out of every 5 had gambled in the past year. So what does that mean? Are they hypocrites? I mean, are they, I don't... The line I used once is, these are the people who, you know, they go to the
They go to church, and like my church, they have bingo and they have raffles all the time.
Sure.
But those are considered just different forms of gambling. But when you get to that next question about do you do bingo and do you do raffles, then it dawns on them that they are indeed gambling.
Yeah.
It's just not the kind of gambling you disagree with.
But the number
is that,
of those
is
people...
That, is
number
is
of
that
these,
what they gamble on?
No.
Okay.
I mean, the number of these folks who have been to casinos is really, really high. And I think what it amounts to, the line I used to use is, they go to the casinos for the buffets and they read Playboy for the articles. But I think that what it is more is what people consider to be gambling. And it's I'm not gambling, I'm just playing the quarter slots. That guy over there at the dollar slots, he's a gambler. In fact, one year I did, after asking all those questions, I had asked in the past year, have you gambled? And about 40% of the people who said yes, they played a lottery ticket or went to a casino or whatever, said no, I haven't gambled. So gambling is a very subjective term. You wouldn't think so, but that's the way it is. Now, the other big component is age. Again, so this is why the 18 to 24-year-olds have absolutely no problem with gambling. And you see how much that more than doubles when you go to the 75-year-olds. So that's a little bit about what we have learned from this survey. There's a tremendous amount more, and certainly anything, particular issues that the committee would like to explore, we would be very happy to provide the information. And with that...
Senator Ross.
Yeah, I would be interested... I mean, I don't know if I'm old for this, but to understand the source of the moral opposition, whether it's do people just have a principle that's uninformed by personal experience, like a religious conviction or something that's wrong, or whether people consider, and particularly younger ones, have now learned to consider the gambling that goes on in Minnesota is just entertainment, and they don't see it as a moral threat to conviction at all. So it's not a moral opposition because it's not a moral issue, as opposed to saying no, gambling is a moral activity. I think it's probably amoral for many people. It doesn't even enter into the realm of that, and it's just entertainment. And entertainment, people are not going to object to that unless it's something that is totally against the law, like what that would be. But anyway, and whether people in the younger groups that are opposed to it or opposed to it because they have an experience with like problem gambling, that they see that either in their peers or have had a family experience or their friends, family friends or something, whose lives have been totally destroyed by addiction to one or more types of gambling. But I would imagine that the younger folks don't even think it's a moral issue, period. Not that it's morally, neither that it's morally correct or morally incorrect. It just has nothing to do with morality.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Rest, I think you're right. But you're also right when you said you really can't poll for that. It's the sort of thing that we would have to do. And it would be fascinating to do it, but to do some focus groups or individual interviews. Or,
right, I think focus groups might give you a better thing than trying to find a question that would review.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, that's really, you have to find it. To find out, surveys are really bad at finding out why. They're very good at finding out what. So, Mr. Chairman, I think I'd like to turn it back over to Clint for the remainder of the presentation.
Before we move on, I guess I'd like to ask if there's any, I'd like to know what people think about the state's role in gambling. In this, are there questions geared towards that? What, you know, the state profiting with the lottery versus?
Mr. Chairman, we have asked about whether they believe the money from the lottery is going to a good cause. We have asked about specifically about if they know where it goes. I don't recall that we have ever asked whether they feel it's appropriate that the state benefit from gambling. I have it in the back of my mind that we once asked something like that, but it's escaping me at the moment.
Okay. Mr. Chair and Mr. Feeney, I am interested in knowing what your theory is of why there's less Native American gambling or fewer visits to casinos.
Okay. Mr. Chairman, Senator Larson, again, this is just guesswork on my part.
Sure.
I really believe it had to do with the legislative debate in 2005. All sorts of our data indicators turned around that year, and they've been very, very slow to come back. Another question we do ask is there too much gambling available in Minnesota? And that was like the morality question was also trending down until 2005 when that went up, and that went up by a fairly significant amount. Now, when they say too much gambling, the problem is that there's no consensus on what the too much is. Too much is whatever it is that I don't do is what it amounts to. I'm trying to think of the other question that we asked. We asked, do you agree with this statement? All gambling in Minnesota should be outlawed. Now, the number of people who agree with that is very small. But again, in 2005, that went up by several notches and has been very slow to come back down. There were also issues of the novelty of the casinos kind of fading. There used to be, even for the 18-year-olds, it used to be the rite of passage that because you couldn't drink at 18 anymore, you would go to the casino.
And buy a pack of cigarettes.
Well, that, I think that's, no, I don't know. I think it's 18. Just from my one-man focus group, which is my 20-year-old son, when he was 18, I asked, well, your friend's going to the casino? Oh, no, we don't do that anymore for her 18th birthday. It's kind of that trend is leveled off. So, again, I think it's because that the novelty has faded to some degree. Long term, who knows?
Okay. Now we're going to
go over some of the initiatives, lottery initiatives that we're doing right now. While recent sales history is good, we can't increase even maintain these levels by continuing to just do the same thing. And so here are some initiatives. The first one is the validation codes for chairman knows all about it because we had a phone call about this because one of the folks in his district had a concern about that, a retailer. So, but anyway, the validation code are the three letters that are circled in red there. That's a code that if this was a $1 ticket, it would say O-N-E. And if it's $2, T-W-O, so you get the idea. And it allows the clerk to simply look at the ticket and not have to validate it on our terminal and pay the winner the $1 and validate it later. And so, as you can see on the $3 ticket there, there is no three-letter code because as of September 18th of this year, we started. It's going to take a while to get through all of the games. We launched 46 last year. We've got six games now, I think, on the street that do not have the codes. And the reason we did that was one of the things But what we found is that our players didn't like it. Can you imagine playing an Aladdin game and you're about halfway down and you stumble across the three codes and they don't mean anything? They have C, B, A. You know, it spoiled the fun of the reveal of scratching the entire game. And so that's one reason. But the most important to us is we've been trying to educate our retailers to validate every ticket because that way you're secure in knowing that the prize you're giving the player is correct. And you're, as a retailer, you're protecting yourself that you are paying out the correct amount. A possible situation would be a dishonest clerk who somebody brings in a $10 winning ticket. They give the person the $10, and they, on their coffee break, they stick that ticket in their pocket and go across the street and get it validated and get another $10. So that's an example of some of the issues we're concerned with. And so, I mean, we want retailers to validate every ticket. It takes 4 seconds to do, and we understand some retailers like to take care of their customers first. They're into customer service, which is fine, but we're trying to sort of we're rolling an education program to try to get everybody to get on board of validating every ticket so that the integrity of the games are maintained, stay high as high as they are. Some marketing initiatives. Of course, as you're probably aware, a lot of our initiatives that have to do with marketing. As you can see, these are some of the things we've done. Traditional marketing doesn't work as well as it once did. We can no longer reach a broad audience simply by putting a couple of commercials on broadcast TV. We need new products and new ways of reaching audiences. And we also need to involve customers to a greater degree, provide a more entertaining experience, even if they don't win. And so, as I indicated, here are some of the approaches that we've taken, and we'll talk about some of these. The first one is last year we launched our first ever raffle game, something old, something new. Raffle has been around since the colonial times. And we sold 500,000 tickets at $10 each. At $10 each. $10. We sold out in about 56 days, and we're launching it again on October 30th, a repeat of last year's. We're also going to we don't have a slide because we haven't developed our scratch game, but we're going to offer a $20 scratch game for the first time ever. The highest ticket we had before, we did a one-time, fives and tens have been our mainstay, but we launched a $15 ticket for the 15th anniversary in 2005. It was quite successful. $20 games are...
Mr. Harris, I know I had spoken with you earlier about Sesquicentennial game. Is that still in the works?
Oh, absolutely.
What level is that?
We're looking at a $5.
A $3.
We're looking at a $3 ticket. In fact, we've kind of, it's going to be a crossword game. Crossword is one of the more popular, we call it long playing games. It takes you a while to, you know, 15 minutes to play through the whole thing. And it's going to be, we hope, if we can pull it off, it's going to be a Minnesota theme with the logo of the Sesquicentennial, and it's going to have the words on there are going to be
locations, cities and towns in Minnesota, counties, and as much as we can.
Cisco Centennial wouldn't fit.
Yes.
Yeah, it's not a very convenient anniversary.
Yes. Anyway, to finish on the 20, we're probably one of the few that haven't done a 20 yet, and it's been very successful across the country. Now, Deal or No Deal is a game that is quite unique because while it's a simple scratch game, it's a very popular TV show, and the game actually plays just like the TV show, where you have to eliminate suitcases. And actually, this is the reason why I decided on September 18th, because you can imagine scratching. You know, most people by habit are going to start at 1, 2, 3, and going halfway through and noting the codes, and they don't mean anything. They're going to be dissatisfied by the experience of not having to finish their $5 ticket. But the unique thing about this game is it's not just in Minnesota. There are 23 states that joined together, each one doing their own unique scratch game, but it has a promotions and component where one of the prizes, there's a $100,000 top prize like every other $5 game, but it also is going to have a chance for our players to win prizes, very nice trips to Hollywood. And some of them may have a chance to actually play on the Deal or No Deal show with Howie Mandel. The company that put this together for us is Scientific Games, one of the vendors. And they said, we can't guarantee that NBC will carry those shows because they like to vet the winners and the people who play with Howie Mandel, but obviously we can't do that because these people won the chance to play. But we're looking to, you know, they say if you have a good show and the player was fun, engaging, there's a chance it may be aired on TV. Again, but there's 24 states doing that. The other compelling component about it is obviously this means that these people have a chance to win up to $1 million, assuming they play the game properly with Howie Mandel. Not properly. With luck, they get a chance to, with the last remaining suitcase, to be $1 million. There's also going to be, in September next year, the game will sort of end with a final chance for each state has a number of people they can send to Hollywood. They're also going to have a certain number of people to win a chance to be an exclusive club of about 130 people nationwide who will have a chance at a final second $1 million prize. And so the game has been very successful. It's selling, we almost sold full, almost $5 million in the first 4 weeks alone for that game. And that's double. I'm sorry.
I've got a non-player's question for you. Does it matter at all how you scratch these cards off? That's a $5, you know, that's a $5 winner no matter what.
Well,
can you?
In this game, what you have to do is, so when you scratch off the one, there's going to be either a dollar amount under there or the words no deal. And so if it's a dollar amount, you're supposed to eliminate. If it's $5, you scratch off the five. That means that prize is gone. If you get a no deal, that you know, just like the show, that prize is gone. You've lost the chance to have it. So you keep playing and see, there are 24 suitcases, but there are 25 prize categories. And so when you're all done, it's either going to be prize or it'll be no deal, which means you didn't win.
Mr. Chairman, it makes no difference.
Right.
You want to go and scratch everything off right away, that's your privilege.
Yeah.
So you scratch them all.
Hmm?
You scratch them all.
Right, you scratch all those suitcases, and what you see underneath, you go eliminate it off of the board as you go along. And when you scratch all 24, for those that want to play the game, I suspect a certain percentage are going to do it. They're going to just scratch the Val code and give it to the clerk and say, scan this and see if I won. Or they're going to actually have fun playing the game, seeing if they're winning or not. So, just like the show.
Hmm? We have video to show.
Yeah, we'll show you the video as well. Is that now? Okay.
Yeah.
I've seen the show.
Hello, Banker. Good deal. So this is the perfect opportunity for us to tell you about the Minnesota State Lottery Deal or No Deal Scratch Game, with two ways to win up to $1 million. including a chance to win a trip to Hollywood to play Deal or No Deal with me, the banker, and all the models for up to $1 million. This is the ultimate game for the ultimate lottery player.
You may have, some of you may have seen those ads. They've been airing over the past 4 weeks or so.
I want to point out, too, on that, that was done with little cut-ins for the Minnesota Lottery logo. Howie Mandel did not, Minnesota Lottery did not pay Howie Mandel. We cannot afford Howie Mandel. But 26 states in combination can. And he would just voice over Minnesota State Lottery, Iowa Lottery, whatever it was, and they put in their own logo at the end. So this is, again, the sort of thing we can do when we work in conjunction with the other states. We could never do on our own.
Where am I?
You are on G.
Okay. Sponsorship and events. One of the things we try to build awareness of the lottery and make it a funding environment is to offer sponsors and events. Of course, following legislative audit, we dropped the number of the events and organizers we sponsored. Since then, because I don't think they were sales-driven per se. They were just big signs in the Metrodome, Powerball. There was no effort to try to drive sales, and obviously that all changed in the end of 2004 and going forward. These sponsors and the events remain an important way to reach audiences that we can't reach through traditional advertising and to provide a more complete entertainment experience. All sponsorships undergo a rigorous review of return on investment before they are approved, including independent assessment of their marketing value. They also undergo a rigorous evaluation after the event is completed to determine whether the return on investment is appropriate, or do we have to change something else, or do we go away from that event and move to something else.
Mr. Chair,
here's
Mr. Yes.
Harris, what
sure.
kinds of events have you found that sponsorship pays for? I know there were a lot of things that were sponsored before,
right.
But are there still some things that
yes.
you have found are
yes.
beneficial to sales?
Yes. Here's an example of some of the events that we've gone to. WeFest, Bayfront Blues, these are all obviously musical events. The Taste of Minnesota, the Steele County Fair, where we sponsor this gentleman who has shot off a cannon over a Ferris wheel into a net, I hope. And of course, we've also one of our more recent sponsorships is with the Mall of America. In exchange for a fee, we've got a Powerball jackpot sign there. They allowed us to hang a Powerball jackpot sign, so you walk in from the east and the west. I think it is, John.
We have two of them.
Two of them on each end. They can see the Powerball jackpot. We have been provided four opportunities to use the rotunda there, where they have all the major events. I think Hannah Montana is there today. We get to use that four times a year to do promotions. There's a photo on the screen. We launched our first ever twin scratch ticket out there and had a couple famous twins participate and get the game kick-started. We've also sponsored some of our sports in Minnesota. Minnesota Wild, Timberwolves, the Twins, the University of Minnesota Athletics, that includes, I think, men's and women's hockey, basketball, football. Is it women's basketball as well? Okay. All the major sports. And, of course, we have sponsors such as Canterbury Park, where we do events that generate and sell tickets.
The Vikings aren't part of that, though.
No. They're... I think we did we at one time, John?
Because of primarily our sports sponsorships are media buys, mm-hmm. along with promotional extensions, and because the NFL is a national, primarily a national
sure.
media buy, we've elected not to go on that
route. Okay. That's cool.
Of course. John covered it, but we look for more than just permission to post ads in the arena. I talked about the front and run advertising our grounds. We use these sponsors to offer unique entertainment opportunities to our players. One of the Twins Okay, I'm a little behind here. Where am I at?
Yeah, you're
okay. The Twins game, win high-quality Twins merchandise and opportunities such as trips to spring training. That was our players really love those. As is that where you're going to show the video now?
Yeah, although Tria Vidi, this is an example of the way that we're, I think we're doing our promotions a little differently. In that instead of just running an ad, we're trying to make things more part of the event. And this is, you've seen these Circle Me Bert things whenever you watch a Twins game. And unfortunately, we cannot get the sound to work on this clip, and you get kind of the idea of how it becomes more a part of the broadcast as opposed to a separate ad. And it gives the players, or the fans in this case, a chance to be part of the experience. Again, more than just, we want to have people be part of an event rather than just show them a commercial. I think that this can be a lot more effective in many cases than a traditional TV ad. So the sound would have been really good. but tis not to be. So
obviously what we're doing is we've got an arrangement with the Twins where they randomly select an adult in the stadium, and they Fox Sports Net will shoot them being awarded 100 tickets at the game, and they get excited. I don't know if there's any actual data to support it, but I understand that Circle Me Bert has become much more popular since we started doing this. Is going to be our, this past season was our second year, third year that we've done this Circle Me Bert. And there's more and more signs being brought to the stadium by our fans. Next one is Timberwolves. We actually worked with them to build this special seating area that I think it holds about 6 people. We call it the Loon's Nest. It's up on the, not on the lower level, but on the upper level. And it allows us to drive sales by people buy, for every, you know, if you buy, what is the amount, 5?
You can enter either online.
You can enter,
or we have promotion.
Right, you enter to pick to you and one person to sit in this Loon's Nest for the entire game, and we have a fun thing they can do at halftime. It used to be a half-court shot, and if you get picked to go down there, you win 100 tickets. If you make the shot, it's 1,000 tickets, but we didn't get too many people who were able to do that, and so I think we're going to change it, make it a little easier, probably move it to the free throw line if you make the shot, you know, and it's something that's done with a lot of other contests that Timberwolves do with other organizations, but we've had a lot of positive reaction from the players on that. We are doing something similar with the Wild. We don't have a shot of it, but we're going to offer fans a chance to ride on the Zamboni between periods. So we look to that to be a lot of fun. We also do in-store promotions. Kind of like a one-by-one, our sales rep gentleman standing there works with a retailer to do a small retail promotion, as Senator Rest talked about with pay at the pump. The retailer is looking for ways to bring customers into the store, and this is what we do to provide that. We'll do special events in the store like the one seen here, or we'll work with them on promotions like buy 10 car washes, get a free Powerball ticket. We require that the retailer's contribution to these events be at least equal to and preferably better than ours. So we're co-opting with them, get them involved. The State Fair, for the first time ever, we're going to be able to participate next summer in the State Fair. We will have a standalone building, which we are negotiating with the State Fair Board for the location at the fair. The building will have heavy emphasis on education, how the games work, where the money goes. It'll be really the really true unique place where we can interact with our customers, our players, at a degree, whatever million people are there.
Senator Rest.
Chairman? Senator Rest?
Mr. Chairman and Harris, number one, why is this the first year? And number two, is there kind of a standalone building, or is part of that also going to be directed in terms of education toward problem gambling?
Yes, yes. The State Fair Board had a policy of no gambling.
I see.
Period. Which personally I thought was kind of odd, because the Midway, meets all the definition of gambling.
Yeah.
They offer beer, and they have beer gardens everywhere. There's adult things going on there. Minnesota is a state agency and should be part of the fabric of the state fair.
So, Mr. Chair, Mr. Harrison, why did they change their rules? Other than, you know,
well,
you all presented a just overwhelmingly attractive idea. I understand that from
Senator Ress. They had a discussion with Representative Kahn. She can be very persuasive.
We, quite frankly, we went to talk to Senator Kahn about our problem, and she volunteered to write a bill to place us into the state fair. And that got their attention, and they asked us to ask Representative Kahn to not put that bill in because it would set a precedent for them. And then all of a sudden they were very pleased.
Representative Kahn that brought us a repeal of the no scalping law, and that looks like that's not going to last very long either. Mm-hmm. So do a good job on education and problem gambling, or there'll be a bill to take you out of the state.
Yes, that is obviously, in order for us to support the cost of being there, we're going to have to sell tickets. But the focus will be on education about where the money goes, about problem gambling, such as brochures like that, general information about, you know, the things in the state, that the programs and projects that benefit from the lottery. So,
Obviously, because of this is going to be major effort, we probably may be dropping some of the current sponsorships, especially the ones around that time, because it's going to take a lot of effort to put that together for us. Advertising. I think I've mentioned earlier, traditional advertising on TV, radio, and newspapers doesn't have the impact it once did. Here are some ways we are revamping our advertising to meet this challenge. One of the things we're talking about is the internet. Unfortunately, we couldn't get a slide to do it in short notice, but we have been using the internet to advertise on some high traffic websites such as the Weather Channel, the Star Tribune, or whatever the initiative we're doing at the time. Lucky Minnesota. Using their net, we created a loyalty program called Lucky Minnesota. The enrollment is free. Members can have winning numbers emailed to them, enter drawings, in some cases unique just to the population of the folks that are members of that drawing. We can take surveys, ask questions of our players. To date, we've got 38,000 members who are currently in that, activated and participating in this Lucky Minnesota website. We've also done some interactive marketing. We call this What's the Difference? We're doing advertising that invites the viewer to do more than just watch the ad. Here's a spot that attempts to convince players that really a $20 million jackpot is a pretty big jackpot.
It's time to play Powerball's What's the Difference? The game that proves any jackpot is big. See if you can spot the six differences between a $20 and $200 million winner, like this phone. Ready? Go! Need a hint? Is everything tucked in? Time's almost up. Got the answers? Keep playing online and win great prizes. Powerball, it's always big.
You can notice at the end that we invited viewers to go to the Lucky Minnesota website to actually play the What's the Difference game and enter a contest to win small prizes. We actually, I think, got about 5,000 people that signed up for Lucky Minnesota.
We increased our membership by about 20,000.
About 20,000.
The next slide is going to be talking about a scratch game that we offered called Welcome to Fabulous Las Vegas. And I want to show you that the campaign that, because it brings together a lot of the different elements at our disposal to create an experience for our players that goes beyond simply buying a ticket and hoping you win some cash. And it was designed to promote the ticket that you see there. Players could win a dream Las Vegas vacation in addition to cash.
But the promotion was designed to do more than just promote this game. It actually promotes the lottery brand as entertainment as well. This is basically all you needed to do to launch a campaign in 1990. Put out some TV, print, and radio. 15 years ago, that was it. And so today, this is what you have to do to really get the attention, not only on the selling of that game, but branding the lottery and building the brand as well, the general lottery. And you can see it needed a lot of ideas. And so we're going to show you a video of the Vegas Soda promotion, which basically pushed this whole thing that covers a lot of those elements. We did no TV, we did no general TV or radio ads for this campaign.
Suddenly I came on with Liberty Mountain.
Oh yeah, what this is, you know? Taking a time, running down for my face.
Running of the offices was kind of on a prayer and a whim. We posted the website out there, and we also put posters in the skyways in the Minneapolis area and hoped that we'd get some Elvises to show up, and we did.
How many Elvises were there?
About about 40, 35 to 40.
Mostly local, or?
Mostly local. I think there was somebody from Wisconsin, which is not too far.
All right. Beneficiary awareness. I particularly like this project. Lottery proceeds help the environment, so does riding the hybrid bus. We believe that making Minnesotans aware of where the money goes is a vital part of our marketing campaign. Our research shows that the more Minnesotans know about where the money goes, particularly environmental programs, the more positive they feel about the lottery and the more likely they are to buy tickets. We use a number of approaches to provide this information. For example, look at how we wrapped that bus. I'm getting ahead of myself. We worked with the Minneapolis Trans MTC to do that. We are also working with the organizations such as the Department of Tourism, DNR, and organizations that benefit from trust fund to help spread the word. Here's an example of an ad in the tourist Minnesota Scenic Byways. There's an ad in there.
We'd like to show you an ad that's sort of a humorous ad about helping Minnesota's environment, and that's what we call a video called Beaver.
Last year, your lottery gave nearly $50 million to the environment. So when you play, it's like you're helping nature.
This is that was a third in the series.
How many times did you show that?
Pardon me?
How many times did you show that?
Still, I've seen that a lot.
It's been on. Yeah. We did.
You see this a lot on.
Now let's switch to corporate social responsibility. Making people aware of where the money goes is one way that we meet citizens' demands that we act in a socially responsible manner. Making people aware of where money goes is part of our responsibility, but there are many other components. Security, of course. Security, of course, is the big part. We have to protect the integrity of our games. Players and citizens must know that games are honest. They must know that the money is handled securely and responsibly. Our operation must be transparent. Of course, the biggest challenge is information security. But we do security audits. We've been doing what's called a SysTrust, which it's like an accounting certification that you get each year. We've done that. I think we're on our third one this year. To verify that our systems are properly secured and can protect the games that we offer. Player protection practices. About a year ago, the Canadian equivalent of 60 Minutes. What do they call the show? Anyway, it's the equivalent of their 60 Minutes. It's a national show. Decided to investigate how many retailers were winning in Canada, and they apparently they came up with statistics showing that retailers claiming large prizes, I think over 10,000, were happening more frequently than they should based on the population, and that's kind of started in Ontario, and they then started looking at the other provinces and found that there seemed to be some situations it seemed abnormal, but in some cases it didn't. And so it made not only the Canadians realize that they have to be more careful about how they protect the integrity of the game, of the scratch ticket between the retailer and the player and the lottery. One of the initiatives, and so the U.S., this has not happened in the U.S., we've looked and verified that our retailers are not winning any more than the normal population, but nonetheless, we realized we have to really take a look at this issue and see if, and that's where we came up with the player protection practices, a series of practices that we were going to use. Chairman.
Did they find a particular weak spot in their security in Canada? It
really actually started, there was this 82-year-old gentleman in Ontario who won $250,000 on a scratch or online, I'm not sure, but the retailer stole a ticket or, you know, got the ticket from him and got the prize. And unfortunately, the Ontario Lottery took the attitude when this gentleman contacted them, I'm trying to remember the details here, that's not our problem. That's between you and the retailer, you know, which is not a very wise thing to do. The director of the Ontario Lottery disappeared after that because of that case. And so this gentleman, he was on cancer, I recall. He had cancer, and it was just really a sad story. And that, I think, is what prompted this organization, this 60 Minutes of Canada, to take a serious look at this. And they found some other instances in other jurisdictions in Canada where the number of retailers, as indicated, who are winning more than they should if you look at the statistics. And so so we realized, you know, having heard about what was going on there, some of the Canadian directors wanted to share with us because they didn't want the same thing to happen here, is to take a look at the practices that we use to protect the player and the process of receiving their prize. And so we've instigated some practices here that were sort of informal before, that we've made them formal. Player education, trying our best to educate them about how to play. The ticket cashing procedures. A very strong education effort to try to get the player to sign the ticket before they hand it to the retailer. Once it's signed, you know, that retailer would not be able to present it for themselves, and so they would be less likely to try to keep that ticket or steal it. We're looking at a technology. We have what's called ticket checkers right now. If you have a Powerball ticket and you go in the store and the clerk is busy with other customers, a number of our stores have what's called a ticket checker where they can at least find out if it's a winner or not. They can scan it themselves. We're looking to develop some technology to extend that to the scratch side as well. Right now, the reader only reads the online, the Powerball types tickets. And so that way a player can be assured that their ticket is, in fact, a winner when they go up there. So they'll know, you know, that they have something coming back to them. We've also added we used to have a receipt that was intended for players, but the retailers would keep that receipt and attach it to the ticket for their accounting records. We've added a second receipt that clearly says player receipt and retailer receipt. So, you know, most stores, when you go there, it even says if the clerk forgets to give you your receipt, you get $5. And so that's important. It's just like a normal transaction. There should be a receipt that the player should get when they're claiming their prize. And also one of the most important things, which I think to some degree got lax in Canada, was the internal process for handling complaints. We're setting up a specific phone number and a website. Doug, are we?
We call it. We change the procedure for filing.
Right. We take every and any complaint from the consumers we've always had, and now we're formalizing that process. We take every and any complaint seriously, and have our security department, Doug Will's department, will do an investigation on whether there's something behind that, or is it just an error on the part of the player or the retailer. So, problem gambling. This is a poster that I'm going to let Don talk about this because I think I think we worked with the North Star Alliance on developing this ad.
Yeah, this is an example of some of the things that we've been working very closely with the North Star Alliance, and actually Cole McVoy, our advertising agency, developed this poster. You notice the lottery logo doesn't appear anywhere on that, which we think is appropriate. It's done under the North Star Alliance newsletter and letterhead. And we have done a number of posters, brochures, for both the North Star Alliance and for the National Council on Problem Gambling. In fact, you notice that the brochures that you have there on the table were ones that we have out at all of our retailers currently, But they were developed working with the National Council on Problem Gambling and are available for any organization to use. Take the lottery logo off. We have a logo on because it's at our retailers, and put their own logo on. So these have been used all over the country. And again, this was developed with the cooperation of Cole McVoy. Some of the other things we do for the North Star Alliance, we've sponsored and helped organize the various state problem gambling conferences. We edit their newsletter. We're providing meeting space. In fact, the Alliance Board will be meeting in this room on Thursday. We're providing temporary office space for Roger, who, by those of you who have not yet met Roger, I hope you'll take the opportunity to do so. And we're putting the problem gambling helpline number now on every lottery ticket, every brochure, and it is posted prominently at every retailer. We're also working with the World Lottery Association, which is developing corporate social responsibility standards and a certification program where people are certified at various levels in accordance with that they meet certain standards for particularly for social responsibility, particularly prevention and education around problem gambling. And our goal is to be the first U.S. lottery certified at the highest level, once the standards are fully in place later this year.
And our goal is for us to be the first U.S. lottery fully certified, by the way. I don't know if you mentioned that. You saved that for me, did you?
Of course.
Okay, future challenges. These are issues that don't need immediate attention but are crucial to future revenue growth. These include some items that we are not necessarily advocating but are bringing to your attention. Changing retail environments. Big box stores, drug stores, and other potential new retailers are popping up all over the place, and they not necessarily thinking that they need to have lottery in them. For instance, Walmart and Target have gone into the grocery business. You go in there, it's a one-stop shop. The grocery chain is one of our probably our best-selling chains of stores, and so that's a concern for us. We will require new approaches to selling and marketing our products. We will require a coordinated national approach, and the North American Association of State Provincial Lotteries is working has a committee that's working on developing a presentation to go after these stores, the Walmarts and the Targets and the Lowe's, to see if there be to try to get them to see the advantage to them in selling lottery tickets. New technologies, technology under development that will help in retail recruitment by making retailers' jobs easier. This is a shot of a vending machine that not only sells scratch games like we have now, but also Powerball tickets as well. One of the things our retailers don't like is the manual process it takes for them to account for their scratch games in their store. Our vendors in partnership with lotteries are working on developing integrated cash registers, so you only have one box on the counter rather than a second terminal. It's all in one. And tools to help with expediting and streamlining the accounting process. We have vending machines, as I indicated, but only in places where they can be monitored. The airport is where kids don't congregate. The machines on screens require driver's licenses for age verification. We will be taking delivery of 10 of those soon. Try and see if they generate revenue for us. Unfortunately, it's not free. This technology isn't free, and it's something that we're going to be carefully looking at what technology benefits us most for the dollars that we would have to spend on them. Future challenges, standards, the North American Association of State Provincial Lotteries, we call it NASPL, so if you hear NASPL, that's what I'm talking about, has since passed by years working on standards. You can imagine Walmart. I don't think we'll be able to sell lottery tickets in Walmart unless they can know that how they exchange their information and the technology is the same at every state.
You know, as we know now today, every state does things a little differently, and that's going to be a large hindrance for us to be able to get into Walmart or Target, because they rely on seamless, the same ways to get their information. So we've been working on standards for the exchange of information between retailers and lottery, standards on the way we test our software when we are introducing new technology into our lottery systems. Then there's credit cards. We talked a little bit about earlier. Currently, credit cards are prohibited. We understand, on the one hand, and recognize the danger of gambling on credit. On the other hand, society is, as I indicated, is increasingly cashless. Cash requirement irritates players. Cash requirement irritates players and retailers. Is there a middle ground possible? Can there be a dollar limit on credit card purchases? Some places, you know, if you buy non-lottery stuff, can you then also include lottery in that as well? Some of the things that we need to look at if we're going to continue to grow our business. Then there's young adults. Lotteries seems old-fashioned to today's 20-somethings, as we've mentioned before. They're looking for something different. Traditional marketing doesn't reach them. They may find lottery more appealing as they get older, or they may not. We need new products, new ways of delivering them, and new ways of marketing to them. Internet sales. Lottery tickets are sold over the internet by several Canadian provinces and other places around the world. In some respects, the internet is really just a different way to deliver the same thing, a scratch game or an online game. Unregulated internet gambling is very dangerous, but can be safe if done properly. Canadians, the Canadian model is that they verify the residence and age and set purchase limits for their internet gaming. There's a federal legal question right now. Last year, the
go ahead.
Okay. It's a federal legal question right now. The Department of Justice, if any state decides to consider entertain the idea of offering an internet bill, they get a letter from the Department of Justice in Washington saying you're violating the Wire Act. You know, I believe the Wire Act doesn't apply to internet; it applies to telephonic races, sports betting only. Nonetheless, it has stopped any state from getting into internet or offering internet. We've always believed, or at least I've always believed, that the state should get to determine what forms of gambling they will allow in their state. And so, another concern we have is the federal law, which basically shut down the internet, the unlawful internet gambling. We have a congressman who wants to regulate internet gaming at the federal level, license and regulate at the federal level, which is a concern to me, because traditionally that's been the state's right to determine that. Yes, Mary.
Mr. Harris, how can you know that a vendor is not allowing you to use a consumer to use a credit card to buy a loaf of bread at a convenience store and also buy a lottery ticket with a credit card?
Quite frankly, I don't know that. I mean, there's no way really, unless we had people standing there at every store, there's no way we would know that. I assume there's probably some. I think generally credit cards, specifically the convenience store industry, they don't like credit cards and debit cards because of the cost and fees. The United States has one of the highest fees in the nation. They prefer cash or check or some other, what other means there are. But I'm guessing, to us, debit cards, we in fact, when I first showed up here, I looked at the rules and we attempted to include debit cards because the banking association describes as a form of cash, like checks. And we were going to add the word debit card for a retailer contract that they can use to sell lottery tickets. And we got a huge pushback from the retailer industry because of the cost of the fees. And so, back to your question,
I suspect most retailers have a policy against credit cards for lottery sale, but I wouldn't say it's universal. I would say some retailers probably allow it.
Mr. Harris, is it against the law?
On credit cards?
Yes.
Where's Dale? Yes, it's currently against the law to sell a lottery ticket with a credit card. Pay for it.
So if you buy a lottery ticket when you buy a bottle of wine and it goes on the credit card and you win, does that taint the lottery ticket? Because it was purchased illegally?
Well, when the person comes in with that winning ticket to claim their prize at the lottery, we would have no way to know, short of asking them, and they'd probably respond accordingly.
So is that not a widespread?
To my knowledge,
I'm looking at John, but I think generally...
Or you wouldn't know because you can't enforce it.
Right.
And it's something that it's definitely hard to monitor. But most retailers, as Clint said, they don't want to use the even debit, which is legal, but the credit card because of fees associated. So most of them have signs posted that will tell them that they cannot use a credit card for the purchase. And they'll take that to the extent and also include debit cards. We don't receive complaints on customers being allowed to use credit cards. Actually, on the contrary, our complaints are this retailer wouldn't allow me to use a debit card. And we do leave that up to the retailer's discretion. And we do get some complaints or questions, why can't I use a credit card for that? But overall, we haven't gotten complaints that it's an issue that retailers are allowed to use credit cards.
It's kind of analogous to a retailer taking a chance to sell cigarettes to minors. There's a statute that would levy a pretty serious fine against a retailer to sell to a minor, whereas if a retailer would sell a lottery ticket outside the parameters of what they're supposed to, more administrative in the sense that they put their license or their permit to sell lottery products on the line if we know about it. It's, once again, it's the same as the cigarette can get thrown until somebody goes in and busts them. Well, it's kind of the same level.
Senator Roebuck, do you have a question?
Yes. If we would allow credit cards, then you would have to have them. If you did anything online, I would imagine. Where would the fee come out of? Would it come out of the prizes? So would you reduce the percent of the prizes paid out? Or what?
The retail. Senator Roebling, Chairman Senator Roebling, the retailer, that's a fee the retailer pays.
But would they be willing? I mean, because they have a very thin margin on it as
right.
It is, so yes. I think they may not be willing. But if you did it online, especially, would there be a retailer or a middleman in between, or would that be...
Quite frankly, I don't think they're willing to do it because of the fees. Right now, the National Association of Convenience Stores has been lobbying very hard for a number of years in Washington to get the fees down to be what they are around the rest of the country. They're sometimes double the amount that other countries charge. Credit card companies in other countries charge for retailers for fees. It's quite large here. So... I hope that would stay and remain a retailer problem, so to speak, because I don't know, because we would see a decline in sales if we had to carve out a fee out of there, out of the prize. The more prize money you can offer, the more sales you get.
Mr. Chair, we had the hearing about paying taxes with credit cards, which a lot of people want to do, and we haven't been able to do it because of the fees also. So it's an issue.
Or even buying you're renewing the driver's license. So it's still an issue online for the fifth state.
If I know the federal government, if you say you're using a credit card, let's say you'll need to add this additional charge to your payment to cover the fees.
The credit card companies won't let us do that. But they've laid the law down on us.
Right, because they don't. When you buy something at Target, with your credit card, there is a fee being charged
right.
to use that. However, the price of the item is no different than if you pay in cash. So anybody who pays cash is subsidizing the credit card purchases because the fee is embedded in the price.
Right.
And the credit card companies will not allow a vendor to show separately the fee that's paid. And that's why we get into a problem with purchasing a driver's license, because they won't allow the fee to be separately stated, and the DPS won't allow people who pay cash or a check at a deputy registrar's office to charge those folks an embedded price for the driver's license. So that's where.
Well, the credit card companies want to perpetuate the myth that it doesn't cost you anything.
That it doesn't cost anything. Yeah. Exactly. And that's why they don't promote it. But if you think you're not paying for a credit card fee when you pay cash at Target, you're wrong. You are paying. Everybody.
Okay, finally, last but not least, we call this category alternate ways of raising revenues. There are, of course, other ways to raise revenue through the lottery. All require legislative action. All are controversial. Mm-hmm. We are not recommending any of these. You are familiar with most of them. Obviously, a state-operated casino would be one. Video lottery terminals in bars and taverns. We all know about the attempts to try to get that to happen. Electronic pull tabs. And monitor games. I don't know if you're familiar with monitor games. Monitor games are not done in every state, but there's about a dozen states that offer them. Imagine a bar where there's probably a 45-inch monitor, a TV monitor up there. And there are games like Keno are played on there. They're more entertaining kinds are where you can actually see an animated racing. You know, you pick your horse and you hope they win. It's all predetermined. They just randomly, you know, throw in these races in there to win. Those have done well. Maryland is probably the one that's done has done the best. You know. Of course, it requires the technology and the TV monitors as well. Thought I heard something. So that's all I had. I hope it was enough. There is a lot more, but if you're still up to it, if there are no other questions, we'd love to give you a tour of our facility.
I do have one was kind of follow up. Thank you to what Don said. When you said that people have a pretty good idea of where the money goes, you know, in the surveys, do they really know where the money goes? Because I have people who, you know, just have all ideas of, you know, where.
With Mr. Chairman, Senator Betzel. If I said people have a pretty good idea, I misspoke. We have about close to 60% now saying yes, they know money goes to the environment in general. By and large, they don't know about the general fund contribution, but to the degree to which they know specifics, that they can point to a specific project or whatever, I doubt that as a rule. But we do know that the people who know that the money goes to the environment are more likely to buy tickets, and they're more likely to have a positive overall impression of the lottery. Now, those are not necessarily cause and effect. They're synergistic. But for that reason, we believe it is very important to at least to try to educate people in general where the money goes. And we are trying a number of things to tell people about specific projects as well. Actually, if you go to the lottery website, you can find a map on there where you can click on a county, and it will bring up a list of all the trust fund projects in that particular county. That's the sort of thing that we really want to show off at the state fair to make people aware of those immediate benefits. There have been projects in every one of the 87 counties in the state, and people need to know that.
Thank you.
Any other questions from members? Hearing none, we'll adjourn this meeting, and hopefully we can stay for the tour. Thank you.
Can I just get a quick show of hands how many people are planning on going on the tour?
How long do you anticipate it's going to be?
That depends entirely on what your level of degree of interest is. I'm sorry, could I?
I can give about a half hour, I guess. So.
Yeah. So we can scoop the two groups. What do you think? What do you think? Mm-hmm. We had about 10. Two groups, one group? All right. Let's give it.